Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkim on a Fan Friday for you guys. And we've got lots of questions we want to get to. But we promised you our thoughts on Last Chance
U. Let's talk about it.
And we told you, if you haven't, stop right now, mute this podcast or pause this podcast. Go finish Last Chance U if you don't want any spoilers. Not that it's really a spoiler-type show. Well, I guess it kind of is. But pause the show and come back to it when you're done, because we're going to talk about Last Chance U.
Well, I guess maybe we will spoil a little bit. But
maybe.
Okay.
But the spoiling stuff is not even the point, though. Like, I watch this show, and I do coach football. And I do have a lot of passionate beliefs about coaching and the way that a coach should be and the coach's relationship with his players and the way to psychologically get the most out of players and your personnel and your coaching staff too, and build an atmosphere and organization. I probably have more thoughts on that than I do even schematically, which I do obviously love that stuff, you know, if you follow my work, but I probably have more thoughts on things from that perspective. And I find it's just a personal affront to me that Buddy Stevens exists and as a head coach, the way that he treats people and players, man, infuriates me.
Dude, not only that, but like he was so, and I guess I'm just going to talk about this as if you've seen the show. Like he was so nice to Cam.
Yeah.
Who was the laziest dude ever. And then I thought he was so quick to judge and like pull the leash on Isaiah Wright.
Oh,
and 100%. It just made me so furious the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So Isaiah Wright's situation, horrific growing up. Right. And I might mess up the details a little bit, from the show, but father was in jail and then had a situation where he and his two brothers, one of whom's at Indiana and the other one is with him at EMCC. They were kind of like they were bouncing around foster care. They had some ugly experiences in foster care where they literally had to fight their foster parents because their one brother was tied up or something he was talking about. And you know, just this crazy life, like bouncing around. People threatened to split up the three of them because they got in trouble, and it was all they knew. They had no structure. Their mom left them, you know. And he talks about all this on the show, and he's here. His brother's at Indiana. He got out of MCC. He was doing well. They interviewed him on the show. Seemed like he was doing well. All the reports are that he was doing well.
Yeah, it did.
His other brother's doing well. And Isaiah's just like, he's trying to do the right thing. You could tell at the beginning of the show, he's trying to do the right thing. And, you know, he gets in a situation where he gets hurt, and football's everything to him, and he has all this negative energy as a result of it. That's something that as a coach you have to understand. Like, you have to be able to work with players when they're in that position, encourage them, and bring them along. Instead, Buddy was as confrontational as could be when this kid his girlfriend just miscarried their baby.
Dude, it was so awful. Like the whole, I thought like he was okay at the beginning of the.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
I
at
need
the beginning
to change.
Of it, but
you know,
just like as stuff started to change, at first Isaiah was like, no, I'm playing through my injury. I'm playing through this concussion. It's nothing. Let me play. Like I'm trying to get my scholarships because at that point he was talking to a bunch of D1 schools.
Right.
And then he gets better from the concussion. All of a sudden he gets a high ankle sprain, which you can convince yourself you don't have a concussion. You can't convince yourself you don't have a high ankle sprain.
Sure.
And so he was just like going through the little bits of that and just trying to recover from it. And Buddy was like, I don't understand why he's not playing.
Yeah.
He was like, dude, the guy's in a walking boot. Like he can't walk. I don't understand why he's not playing. No, I just told you why he's not playing, you idiot.
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
I guarantee you, he talked all of the D1 people out of getting – because at the end of the show – if I'm spoiling this, but Isaiah Wright, who was the most talented offensive player that they had other than maybe DeAndre Johnson, he does not get a single D1 offer,
right,
which is ridiculous, especially if you like met Isaiah Wright.
Freaking Cam got one. Cam got
right, and he's like the what?
Pitt. He's up at Pitt.
I guarantee that Buddy Stevens went to every D1 offer and said, "Don't sign Isaiah Wright. Oh, yeah, quit 100%. On your team." And that's the most infuriating truth. They don't say that in the show, but I guarantee that's what happened because I can't remember where he ended up going, but he went to a D2 school, and I'm just. Yeah. I'm so far team Isaiah Wright.
Yeah,
they're bringing Buddy Stevens back for a 10th season.
And isn't it telling that everyone around Stevens, like Marcus Wood, the offensive coordinator, who was great by the way, and should have been head coach, terrific.
If you somehow run a guy like that off,
yeah,
you suck.
He steps down. Defensive coordinator Hawley leaves. Trickett left. He went to Florida Atlantic, where Lane Kiffin is. Brittany Wagner, who's going to be on the show next year, by the way? And we say show, but this is literal reality. And at one of the bigger, more popular JUCO schools in the country, where not only should football be happening, and we love that part of it, but the rehabilitation in some ways of lives, you know, the last chance part of it. Like, I felt like Buddy was the only person that didn't get the last chance you part of it. Like, that's the name of the podcast. That's like what the school, you know, they keep referring to the school as Last Chance U. He didn't act like he cared about that aspect of things for players. Like, that to me is, if that's the essence of the show.
Right.
And by the show, I mean, if that's the essence of the school and what they're trying to present there, which I think for Brittany Wagner, for Davern Williams, who was the defensive line coach, who was awesome. And by the way, who told a recruiter when he was there, he said, "Who's that?" And about Cam and Buddy, and Davern Williams was like, "That's somebody you don't want on your team." And then, look, Cam's the one with the D1 offer. I wonder why. Buddy probably said whatever with Cam because he isn't in tune with his players. And he doesn't have his coaches back. He didn't have Davern Williams back in that situation. So there were so many levels I was infuriated by that, by the show and by Buddy, because I am a strong believer that these kids, if you're going to believe and say all these things in front of the camera during the interview parts, you know, like you believe these kids deserve a second chance or something, and then nothing you actually do encourages that. That guy cared about one thing, and it was winning the championship. And that I am all about victory and that being the highest in terms of athletics. But you have a higher purpose where you are. Like, you have a bigger purpose where you are. But even if it was just winning from a coaching perspective, can you fathom being inspired in any way by the way that he conducted himself? I mean,
they referenced a bunch, and I actually really, really like this about the show. The show is very real in the fact that they let the people who were in the show, like, they're very aware that the show is going on. The first couple of episodes, all the players, Miss Brittany, like, everybody was referencing, like, yeah, Last Chance U, this is why we're known, this show. This show that you guys are having me film at this very moment is blah, blah, blah. And so they were very real with that. And what pissed me off was near the end, Coach Buddy, like, talked about how he was really, like, he was sick and tired of the cameras and he was tired of all of this and he was tired of being a part of the show. But you know what? I don't think that he was tired of the show. I think that he was tired of, feeling like he had to keep trying to be a better dude, because at the end of the show, you saw him completely unravel and blow up on people that he had no business blowing up on at all. And that's why it makes me think he wasn't tired of the cameras. No. He was tired of people trying to make him change and to be a better person because he's not.
Yep.
So
100% agree. Yeah. He was tired of trying to put on an act for cameras during the interview parts.
Yeah.
And then feeling like who he was during the tough parts of games was going to be portrayed in a certain way. But that way is just reality.
Like, I want to be a better person. No, you don't. If you did, you would be. Right. You don't.
Yeah. As soon as any type of adversity presented itself, and this is when characters made, as soon as any type of adversity presented itself to him, he went right back to who he was before. And then by the end of the show, it was 10 times worse than even that. So
I will say this, though, as we kind of got to wrap this up, I guess. Because we've been talking forever. But the storylines, the players, the characters, they weren't there in season two nearly as much as they were in season one. But I got to say, I still thought Netflix did a really good job making the absolute most of what they could with what they had. Like, I think it's in episode 5 where they go parallel between EMCC and that 0-7 school they were playing.
Right.
And they just, like, go back and forth. And it's like, oh, you have an academic coach in Miss Brittany? Yeah, we don't have that.
Right.
Oh, you have all these nice things. Yeah, we don't have that. And so, like, it showed you how, like, how outside the box, like, EMCC was compared to these other JUCO schools. I thought that was a, brilliantly scripted and designed episode. So,
yeah,
the storylines kind of suck. The players kind of suck to follow, except for Isaiah. But I thought they did a pretty good job with what they had.
Yeah, I also like the linebacker that went back to Texas Tech.
Yes, yeah, Dakota Allen.
Dakota Allen, yeah, yeah. I thought his story, to me, he seemed like a guy who really regretted what he'd done and wasn't blaming anybody but himself and accepting responsibility for what he did, which I think is a huge step for a lot of them. And so,
yeah, when he was sitting in the office and he just kept saying, like, I'm an endangerment to society, like, but that was hard to hear.
Yeah, right, exactly, because it sounded like he made him. It sounded like he genuinely made a mistake, and he, you know, he got caught up with the wrong people, and he regrets it. But he felt like he could never get that monkey off his back again. And it was gonna haunt him forever. So yeah, the show's really well done. I agree with you. Like the storylines weren't quite as compelling, but the show's really well done. It's hard to watch as a coach because you want to care about the kids. You want to see the kids, you know, grow and be treated like human beings, you know, be treated like, you know, Isaiah Wright was treated like trash his whole life, you know? So it would have another person that is supposed to be someone that represents change and a turnaround. Yeah, it just was, that was hard to watch. But, all right, we got questions. So enough on Last Chance U. We did a good solid 10 minutes there on Last Chance U.
That's good.
Eric Herman says, which vehicle of your choice would you arrive to training camp in?
So like I could arrive in any vehicle?
Yeah. Well, James Harrison arrived today in a fire truck to Steelers camp.
Well, I was gonna say either a replica Batmobile.
Yeah.
Or if that's not available, like an army tank, just a straight army tank.
Would like a helicopter? Could you choose that?
I mean, I don't know if you could do a helicopter, that'd be pretty badass too. Yeah,
does any of the above basically there.
I got it. I'd ride in on a lion. There we go. Next question.
On a lion?
Yes. Seems like something like T.O. or Chad Johnson would do, and now I'm upset that they never did.
Oh, my goodness. I'm just picturing it. Like, you're flowing Maine, man. The lion's flowing Maine. It's like Maine on Maine on Maine, man. Oh, my goodness. How do you think Sammy Coates being out a couple weeks affects his odds of making the 53-man roster? Kind of a Steelers-related one, but yeah,
that's for you.
Sammy Coates might be a little SOL here, folks. Man, I don't know if I see a great path for him unless he gets back out there quickly and really shows out. And I think Sammy Coates can make a bunch of rosters around the NFL. Don't get me wrong. Like, even though I've never been the biggest fan of him, but Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, and the one I will say this: if Martavis Bryant's reinstatement, if the NFL drags their butt on that, and you know that they could because that's how they roll. But Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Eli Rogers, Juju Smith-Schuster, those guys are probably making this team. That's four. Darius Heyward-Bey is the guy that they've loved. He blocks. He plays special teams. He's one of the favorites of, like, everybody on the team in the locker room. The coaches love him. So he has a pretty good shot, I think. And then you have – remember Justin Hunter, the castaway from everywhere else?
He's on the Steelers?
He's on the Steelers, so he's still hanging around.
Oh, my goodness,
around,
dude.
Yeah.
Justin Hunter could play.
I know. He's, like, not a bad fifth option or sixth option, you know. Kobe Hamilton played.
Justin Hunter and Cordarrelle Patterson, when they were at Tennessee with Tyler Bray, was, like, prolific.
Oh, yeah, right. And then they were like, oh, yeah.
And then nothing happened.
But then Kobe Hamilton played last year because of injuries and was good and blocks, and the Steelers really value that in receivers. DeMarcus Ayers played some down the stretch last season and was really good when there were some injuries that happened. He's a quicker, shiftier guy than Coates, and if they have guys who can win vertically like Heyward-Bey and Martavis out there, then the need for Coates starts to go away. So I think he's a long shot to make it. I would guess he doesn't make it today, and if he doesn't play, it's obviously not helping his chances at all. So Super Bowl on the line, fourth and goal from the 4-yard line. Your receivers are Limus Swede and Aurelius Ben. Where's that ball going?
To hell.
the out of the end direction zone. Your season's going in the toilet.
I don't know, man. I guess Aurelius Ben.
Yeah, I'm throwing Aurelius Ben. I saw too much of Limus Swede to trust that, but. I don't know much about. I actually didn't watch a ton of Aurelius Ben, so. But
he was all right.
Yeah. Thoughts on Pitt offensive tackle Brian O'Neill? Liked what he did last year, right tackle. Don't have not watched him, Anthony, but we will have him on the radar. I don't know if he's an upperclassman or not, though, at this point. Flacco hurt. Dixon, Tavon Young, Darren Waller out for the year. Pitta and Orr are done. Urschel retired, but still think Ravens will be formidable this year. Crazy? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
Look at the Ravens situation is this to me. Like, offensively, their best running back is probably Terrence West, and we've already seen how that's gone here. The offensive line is probably worse after losing Wagner. Ronnie Stanley will probably be solid in his second year. Now they've lost Urschel, who is going to probably start at center, and they've lost Wagner, the right tackle. They still have Yonda at right guard. Left guard is Alex Lewis, and he'll compete with Nico Siragusa. There's not a lot of answers on the offensive line. If you can't protect Joe Flacco, he's toast. He can't do anything outside of that. They don't have a reliable running back to turn to. Their receivers are adequate if Breshad Perriman shows up. Jeremy Macklin's had a couple down years coming off injury, older. Mike Wallace aging. I don't see this offense has a chance to be the worst in the league. I really think that. I think defense has some nice pieces, but they're weaker at inside linebacker. They still don't have obvious solution at pass rusher, edge rushers, because Suggs is there getting older. You have Bowser and Williams. How quickly are rookies going to contribute heavily as pass rushers? It does not happen very often where that's the case. And the secondary is going to be great. You know, Jimmy Smith banged up his foot today, I think, again, and that the foot has bothered him for a while now. But the secondary is going to be, I mean, Weddle, Jefferson, that's going to be a good safety tandem. But I don't think they're going to be as good against the run. I don't think they can get to the quarterback at the same rate that they have when they've had those. They're going to have an elite top three defense in the NFL to even have a chance, right?
I feel like they're too young for that, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, they'd have to have a lot of young guys to step up for the Ravens to be pretty good with all the injuries that they have. Right. So yeah, it's a little bit of a long shot for them for sure.
I'm typically one of those types that's like a little bit. I kind of build up the opponents of the Steelers in the AFC North, kind of just in my head, you know, kind of like, oh, they're pretty good. You know, they might give the Steelers, you know, some struggle, trouble in certain matchups and stuff, but I can't see with Baltimore. I mean, I know they're going to play tight when they play each other, but for the actual, you know, season, I don't know. It doesn't seem like something that Baltimore has in them. I'd be shocked if they went over 500. I really would be. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. The SeatGeek app is something I've got on my phone. I have found that it's not only incredibly easy to access this on your phone and to search these things on your phone, but it organizes the information in a way that makes the buying experience incredibly simple. And for me, that's huge. Like, I'm kind of an organizational person. I don't like to have a million options flying at me on different pages. SeatGeek just kind of organizes everything very simply and presents the information to you so you can make the best decision. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, and this is the thing that I think I really like the most, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. So it just does the work for you. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Here's what you got to do. Our listeners get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app on your phone and enter promo code LONFL today. That's promo code LONFL for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Make sure you guys check that out if you're looking for tickets anytime in the near future. By far, the best way to go. If you saw Roger Goodell walking down the street, Trevor, what Yes. would you say or do?
I mean... Do people want me to say that I'd like kick him in the nuts or something? Because I wouldn't.
Roger Goodell is that he's a good businessman.
Like, I'd probably just like panic and literally just point out and be like, "Hey, you're Roger Goodell."
Yeah.
And he'd be like, "Yeah." And they'd be like, "All right, well,
I probably wouldn't do anything, to be honest. Like, I
would have a nice
care,
day. You know? I don't know. I really don't know.
He's a good businessman to me, but
I'd
say
hello to
him
for sure, and I'd shake his hand. Right. But like, I'm not gonna get into the corrupt marijuana policies of the NFL. You know, the substance abuse policies of the NFL. If I'm walking by him in the street, you know,
yep,
and he's enjoying a nice hoagie or something, he's mid bite. You know,
right?
I'm not gonna get into that.
Do you walk and eat a hoagie frequently? Is that a... he's just
nah,
walking down
but
the street?
I mean, like, Goodell seems like a guy who would enjoy a nice hoagie. Am I wrong?
We shouldn't record at night, man. I don't even know what's going on right now.
It's Fan Friday. The people
that's
are
true.
Fine.
The people came here probably for this specifically. So,
yeah.
Okay, I think this is a Game of Thrones question. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
I don't so
either.
This will be fun.
Let's just pass. Should we just pass? I don't even know. I don't know.
If it's a Game of Thrones question, then yeah, I'm not going to.
Do you think Daenerys descends into bonkers like her father Aerys and or Nebuchadnezzar the second in the book of Daniel? Oh, man.
This is Kissed, isn't it?
This is Kissed, yeah. Of course always. It is. How about this one? Could both of you tackle Marshawn Lynch?
No.
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 And
I mean,
you're
the
fast
only,
and you could generate a lot of momentum.
The only way it could happen is if I go for his ankles and he jumps and you, like, hit his legs out from under him.
His legs
and
are like cinder blocks.
You know what I'm saying, though? I know, but you gotta man up. Like, this is the plan. Like, you weigh more than me. You got more strength than me. Like, you just gotta man up and you gotta take him on in the legs and knock him over.
If I hit one of his legs, my shoulder's gonna go dead for like the rest of my life. I don't know, man. I'm bigger than Marshawn. I'm like a lot bigger than Marshawn Lynch. He's like 5'11", 215. And by bigger, I mean I'm 6'3", 235, 240. So you would think that I could, but I don't think there's any way.
There's no way Marshawn's 215. I'm just
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, he's like 225.
I'm sure you read that somewhere, yeah. But like the dude's a tank now. He might have been 215 like 3-4 years ago.
He's even a little
heavy. He's in Oakland like eating well.
Yeah, right.
Eating well.
I mean, he looks like
he does.
He doesn't even look like he got in condition for this season, but I guarantee you when
not
they get
a chance.
The rock, it won't matter.
He looks like he's going through that Lendale White phase.
That's exactly what he looks like, only he's actually tough.
I remember reading Lendale White lost a bunch of weight one year. They're like, how'd you lose weight? And he's like, I just stopped drinking stuff with tequila in it. We're like, all right, okay then.
Thanks for your honesty, Lendale.
There you go.
Who is your surprise double-digit win team in 2017? Surprise.
Let me think about this.
Ooh, I don't – honestly, here's what I'll say up front. I don't know that there will be a true surprise team. First of all, there's only 32 teams, and we already know like 8 of them are making the playoffs that are making it. So there's – let's be honest. The NFL, there's a certain amount of intrigue with a couple teams every year, but for the most part, I don't think that – typically in a typical year, I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of – like a whole lot of shockers in terms of teams that don't make
it. I got two. So like I got one NFC, one AFC just off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the Chargers.
That's who I was going to say, actually.
And the Saints would be my. And the only reason I say the Saints is because people think the Saints are going to go 6-10. When you have Drew Brees and Michael Thomas and all those running backs, mm-hmm. and if their defense stays healthy, we're talking about a team that could easily win double-digit games. So those are my two.
I think Minnesota could be one, too. I would have said San Diego's or Los Angeles as well in the AFC.
Is Minnesota? I mean,
but
yeah.
Is Minnesota surprised? That's what I don't know.
Right. I don't know.
They were 8-8 last year. I don't know. But I think the offense can be efficient. Dalvin Cook changes the running game. The offensive line is a good bit better.
Yeah.
The defense is healthy again. And I mean, they have 3 great pass rushers. They have really good players in the secondary. I, at a lot of key spots, I think that they're strong enough. And honestly, I think Detroit's going to struggle this season. I don't think that defense is very good at all. And I don't think Chicago's ready for the next step either. So I think that division is going to be very top-heavy in Minnesota and Green Bay. And so... yeah, I think Minnesota could do it potentially, but yeah, Saints are a really good choice too because the defense is freaking healthy finally, and well, kind of Nick Fairley, they already down Nick Fairley, but yeah, that could be one. Tampa Bay, they're in that conversation, right?
Yeah, but a lot of people think the Bucs are going 9-10, you know, so I wouldn't call that a surprise.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of surprise. Those we probably named like the only ones that really make sense as surprises.
Right. It's not like I'm going to name the Browns or something, you know.
Not get crazy.
The Jets.
I don't even understand this question, but it's Chuck Diesel, so we have to read it.
I gotta read it.
We have to
get our weekly Chucky D.
Exactly. Chucky D Number 8 says, Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport seem redundant. Can you fix that?
I know a guy. That's all I'll say.
I know you're not going to respond to that.
Chuck Diesel wants to slide me an envelope.
Yeah. Let us know, Chuck. How interested are you in us fixing it? Let us know. Better rookie season from non-first round wide receiver, Juju Smith-Schuster or Chris Godwin? Ooh. I think it's going to be Juju. Because here's why. The Martavis Bryant situation.
That's a great question.
Yeah, the Martavis Bryant situation scares me a little bit because I don't know what the NFL is going to do. And I don't know, man. So he contributes right away if that, for some reason, continues on.
I'm with you, but from the Tampa side, and you know I like Juju, and I think Juju can play right away, mm-hmm. you know, in a nice like secondary kind of a role, if as long as you have a number one. But here's the thing about Godwin too. He's not going to play in the slot. He's only going to play on the outside.
Right.
And DeSean Jackson is not going to play the whole game. They're going to use him sparingly. So, like, Godwin's going to start off. I mean,
how sparingly?
I don't mean people should like panic in fantasy football, but like they have enough depth on the offense and enough options to preserve his stamina so that when he is on the field and when he's doing the things that they want him to do that they signed him for, he can run that 4.3 speed, you know, that 4.4 speed, whatever it is. They're not gonna gas the crap out of
him. Right. That makes sense.
And so I think he'll play plenty. I don't mean to not say that, but I just bring that up because Chris Godwin's gonna get snaps in week one, you know.
Yeah. He will get snaps, you're right. But I could see a lot of OJ Howard and Cameron Braid on the field at the same time.
Depends, man. We got training camp coming up starting tomorrow.
I know what you see.
I'll be able to tell you guys a lot more about the tight end situation as the week goes on there because they're gonna play, but again, yeah, they're gonna play. We look at all these options and you wonder who's gonna get on the field, but in terms of Godwin, they like him a lot. They're not going to be afraid to play him early. And two, like if D-Jax gets hurt at any point in the year, Godwin's in. And it's the same situation for Juju. So I know we're kind of like tiptoeing around the answer, but I think we're both saying that both of these guys could put up some decent numbers as long as the situation is there for them to do so because they're good enough and the team seemed to trust them to do it. So I would say Godwin just because.
I think I'll go with my guy Juju.
All right, there you go.
We'll evaluate moving forward. But yeah, how they get used. I bet Juju runs. If Martavis can't practice yet, Juju will probably run first team tomorrow. I bet. Potentially. We'll see.
I love it, though.
Steelers will most likely take a safety in the upcoming draft to replace Mike Mitchell at some point. Who so far would be a good fit for them? So the Steelers run a lot of cover three with Mike Mitchell as a single high safety. But they're reportedly going more man. And I think you'll see some two-man coverages a good bit this season too, and so I think they're going to mix things up more often than not. So will they play Sean Davis in more of a single high role moving forward if they do replace Mitchell at some point? Because that's going to dictate the answer to this question, I think, because I don't know about you, but not that anyone's going to remind you of Malik Hooker, but Marcus Williams, Eddie Jackson, there were other ball-hawking type single high safeties that would play that kind of a role that had range and ball skills, even if there were other weaknesses surrounding them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see dudes like that really in this draft. Maybe that's Derwin, but he's going to go higher than I'm sure the Steelers will pick.
Yeah, and I guess we're not sure yet, but yeah. I mean,
it's not a bad question. It's just really hard to answer.
It depends. Obviously, unfortunately, the draft, Nick and us says it depends where they're drafting. You know, like Ronnie Harrison seems like a Steeler. He seems like a Steeler, but again, if they're picking later, then I don't know. Are they going to pick somebody with the athletic talent of like Brandon Bryant from Mississippi State? Right. If they're just betting on somebody who might have the athleticism to play in coverage, you know, who knows? So I don't think the Steelers are going to be picking high enough, like you said, for Derwin. Right. And so they'd probably look day two for one of these guys. And so those are two guys that I guess I would say just because they're Steelers like players and I would like to see them there with that kind of coaching. So
I think this too, AJ, is that I think a lot, it's a good question. I think a lot depends on what the Steelers do schematically and what changes take place this year and how Mike Mitchell's used, if he's used a little bit differently this year than in the past. And if, you know, the whole defense, the whole secondary is used a little bit differently because right now I think I would say, and how Sean Davis is used moving forward. Because right now, I think I would say that I don't see anybody in this draft who is very similar to Mitchell in the way that the Steelers utilize him. So it would be hard to answer from that perspective, too. How do you guys effectively self-scout, and are there any tips you can give a beginner to help recognize weaknesses early on?
Weaknesses in players? Like weaknesses,
I think, in
weaknesses how you scout?
In yourself from a scouting perspective. I've noticed a lot of people have weaknesses toward players of the college that they root for, and I'm lucky to avoid this because I don't root for any college and really never have, so I don't really have a lot of those inherent biases, but I've noticed a lot of people look at players that they've watched for 4 years or watch get recruited to their school, play for their school. They have like some emotional attachment to them, and psychologically it's difficult to detach themselves from that. So I've seen that. I've seen guys develop a strong attraction, and I've been at fault for this, especially in the past, to a player from a couple plays, a couple splash plays, or a couple amazing plays, and that holds a lot of weight with them psychologically. So as they continue the evaluation, they kind of will sweep any concerning things under the rug because they magnified and built up the positive play and minimized the weaknesses, and that works vice versa, I think. As well. So sometimes we'll turn ourselves off to potential weaknesses and to potential strengths because we become too attached to the first thing we see or the loudest, you know, quote unquote, thing that we see on tape, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I would just say, you know, like from my perspective, I never played football growing up. So everything that I watch, I have learned from someone else. Yeah. So, you know, just seek out people who do good work, interact with people all the time. Make sure you're reading as much as you can, because that's such a big deal. But honestly, there's a lot of people who do really great stuff, and we're fortunate to live in an age where we have some pretty easily accessible stuff to do. And we're also fortunate in an age to where you can decide one day, like, hey, man, I want to just get into the NFL draft. And you can do it. And you can start right away and get a social media and try to build a brand and all that kinds of stuff. So I would just say that from somebody who doesn't have a football background, always seek out people who know what they're talking about, read their stuff consistently, and you'll be surprised how long you do this stuff, and you'll always learn something new. So it's a pretty fun process.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah, I think that's you hit the nail on the head there. If you're always seeking to learn and to understand things, and there's so much stuff out there online, even from, you know, people who've written a lot about football, you know, sites like Inside the Pylon and sites like Chris Brown, Smart Football, and those kind of things. If you're just seeking to learn more about the game and better understand players' assignments and whether they're executing them on tape, that's something I continuously seek out and try and do if I'm watching a player and want to understand something even better. So yeah, that's your questions. That's your Fan Friday little rundown right there from Trevor and I. You got our little Last Chance U recap at the beginning and got the answers to a lot of those questions. We're launching into camp modes now. This is so, I mean, I am just stoked for football, dude. Like, yeah. I'm stoked for it. I can't freaking wait. Yeah. It's awesome. We got the Hall of Fame game. What, how many days away now? Just a handful.
Yeah, less than 2 weeks,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So I'm so excited. You know, this is best time of the year. So keep listening right here. We're going to have college football previews next week. We'll talk some conference action, and then eventually we're going to get to our rankings here, you know, positional rankings, and we're going to kind of unveil those as we go down from players that we've seen so far anyway, and by no means final, but we want to give you guys kind of a glimpse as to where we're at right now with the class and heading into the year. So we'll give you that too before the season starts. But as for always, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.